I might be dating myself, but did you ever watch the movie called Good Will Hunting? It came out in December 1997, so that's like 27 years ago. Matt Damon and Robin Williams star in it, so it's pretty epic if you haven't watched it yet. But I want to talk about a certain scene. It's an iconic scene that will never be outdated, and I would venture to say it's one of the most powerful scenes written and produced in cinematic history. It's like the "you can't handle the truth" scene from the movie A Few Good Men. And if you don't want to watch the entire movie, that's okay. I'll give you the link to the YouTube video, the show notes, if you want to watch it. But basically, Robin Williams plays Dr. Sean McGuire, okay? I'll call him Dr. Sean. He's a therapist who helps Matt Damon's character named Will Hunting. So, Good Will Hunting, get it? He's like a brilliant but a very troubled young man that deals with his trauma. And you got to picture this scene. They're both talking to each other. It's just they're having a session. They're talking to each other and they're talking about their past. And it's a pretty intense scene. And they're talking about this abuse, okay, that they've suffered through. And Dr. Sean, as he was looking through his folders and looking through his files of this kid's history of abuse, he walks a little closer to him and he says, you see all this?" pointing to all the files. "This, it's not your fault." And Will looks at him and looks down and says quietly, yeah, I know that." And the doctor, Dr. Sean, says, "Look at me, son." And he looks at him. He says, "It's not your fault." And he repeats it again. I know," he says, looking a bit annoyed. And the doctor looks at him and he says it again. "It's not your fault. I know." "No, you don't. It's not your fault." And he walks closer to him. In fact, during this scene, he repeats, "It's not your fault," 9 times. So he says a total of 10 times until finally Will breaks down in tears as Dr. Sean comforts him and they stand embracing together. This scene again is considered one of the most impactful and deeply emotional part in the film or in the film of all time, showcasing the power of empathy, the power of vulnerability, and the breakthrough. But why does it hit so hard? And why does it take repetition? Because repetition breaks down resistance. The phrase, "It's not your fault," with this each repetition wore away his emotional armor. You like that? Emotional armor. Emotional armor. I came up with that. Which forced him to confront his buried pain. There's something very powerful about repetition. The concept of repetition in golf is about layering intentional, repeated motion to wire skills into subconscious. And that repetition can break down resistance. It can wear away your problem areas. It can reprogram your bad habits and flaws. Repetition can do some amazing things to your skills. Hey, remember that concept of 10,000 hours? It says if you do something over and over for 10,000 hours, you will become an expert in whatever you're repeating. But here's the problem. Repetition alone is a double-edged sword. The 10,000-hour rule, bro, it's a lie. Because according to the study, the mere repetition doesn't create mastery. But very challenge-based repetition does. Meaning, if you hit a perfect 7-iron shot off the perfect lie 10 times in a row, you're not practicing mastery. You're just simply performing. The real and true mastery of your 7-iron will come with different type of practice. And I am so excited right now to tell you all about it. So stay tuned. This is Hanju Lee, and you're listening to Better Golf Academy. I'm here to share the best secrets of improving your score without mechanical swing tips. It's all about strategy and your mental game. So are you ready? All right, let's go. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Better Golf Academy podcast. I am your host, Hanju Lee. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you had an amazing week. And if you didn't watch the Houston Open with Minwoo Lee getting his first PGA win, man, you really missed out. It was coming down to the stretch. And there were a couple moments where he could have just basically lost it all, especially when he hit it in the water on the par five on the 16th hole. He hit his drive so far right, it never even crossed the land. So there was no place for him to drop, and he had no other option other than to re-tee it. Can you imagine the horror with Scottie Scheffler breathing down your neck? Scottie birdies, Minwoo bogeys, and now he only has one stroke advantage, and he has got to finish the last two holes without a bogey. And he does it. And during his interview, he said, man, I always felt like I had all the assets to win. And it was just, can you do it mentally? That was the only question. And he said, bro, I am exhausted. That was a lot of mental grind. And isn't that the truth? The most of the players on the tour that we watch are on the tour because of their incredible talent to play the game. But the ones that win and that continue to win somehow stands out because they were able to win by overcoming the mental barrier. And they always, always tribute their win to their mental toughness. That's why I'm telling you, this is important. This podcast being dedicated to mental toughness and strategy, dude, it is important. And some would say even more important than how pure your shots are. Do you agree? Okay. Anyway, today I really want to tell you about what I'm learning about practice. And if you haven't yet, check out episode number 5. It's titled Secret Sauce to Awesome Practice. And I go really deep into what happens to your brain when you do a deliberate practice. And I talk about the science of myelin around your neural pathways and how that makes up the idea of talent. And that practicing, which is defined by doing something repetitive with a goal of improvement, if that's done right, can be a complete game changer. But I want to take one more step deeper into what that episode talks about. And it's not just repetition, but I want on this episode to talk about something called adaptive repetition. And let's call it repetition without repetition. Okay, that's not that funny. But first, let me introduce you to Dr. Rob Gray. He's not going to come on the show, but he wrote a book called How We Learn to Move. And this is a goldmine for understanding skill acquisition, and the concept he introduces in practice is the theme of effective versus mindless repetition. Okay, for example, there's a couple of different ways to increase your skill in hitting the ball with your bat. Okay, that's right. I just changed sports on you. So let's talk baseball for a second. Say you want to improve your swing. So what do? You spend hours and hours practicing in the batting cages, right? And there are two ways that was researched during the batting cage practice that created a very interesting result. So number one, on the batting cage created a very sterile environment where the balls come at the same speed, same trajectory, and it created somewhat of a false mastery. So hitter naturally developed and grooved the swing that works in that environment. Then the same player really struggled against real pitchers. Okay. The second person, instead of hitting 50 identical pitches, they mixed the speeds and spins randomly in this pitching machine. And guess what? The study showed that this practice concept improved in-game hitting by 40% versus just block sterile practice. Conclusion? If you're dominant on the range, all right, I switched back to golf again. So let me start again. If you are dominant on the range, but you lose it on the course, you're not alone. You're just stuck in the battle cage illusion. The best athletes are made in a sterile repetition. They are forged in the fire of variability. Forged in the fire of variability. You like that? I didn't come up with that one. I think that's from the book. So, okay, let's take a step back. We're talking about the ways we can waste our time during practice. And some practices aren't practices at all. It might as well be a warm-up. Just call it a warm-up. A repetitive hitting in the same shots and switching clubs with the same lie, same swing, which is fine. You can do that before each round. You can go and warm up. Or they call it a performance because all you're doing is showing off your technique and skill, how you can hit your same shot over and over again, right? So what is the solution? Solution, okay. Repetition without repetition, or repetition with variation, or adaptive repetition is defined by being purposeful, evolving practice or skill by intentionally introducing variability. Variability, sometimes you challenge, you throw out challenge, and also feedback, by which ensuring improvement, and that translates to real performance. And like I said, it's not mindlessly repeating the same swing, but mixing clubs and lies, like uphill, downhill, rough, dirt, sand. Got to hit out all those. Changing targets and changing shots, fading it, drawing it, punching it. You get this. I went to a local golf practice range, Strawberry Farms here in Irvine. And you have some really, really awesome athletes that are working out over there and hitting on the range. So I get to see some of them. And I just happened to walk by a lefty, and she was hitting her wedge shots from the range. It looked really good. I didn't think anything of it other than her, you know, super effortless, smooth swing. But when I got closer, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. She was hitting left-handed with the right-handed club, you know, with the head facing down. You know what I'm talking about, right? She was naturally right-handed, and she had right-handed clubs, practicing her left-handed swing with the right-handed club. She was just practicing her shot just in case a ball lands where you can't get a clear right-handed stance. She was developing a shot that most of us don't have in our bag, right? This could save her a stroke, and that stroke could help her win the tournament. And I was so shocked at her amazing creativity and to know that she was having fun doing it. And she was practicing repetition without repetition. She was practicing repetition with variation, or she was practicing adaptive repetition. It was beautiful. Now, let's talk about another way to not waste your time during practice. So according to Dr. Rob Gray in his book, How We Learn to Move, he said it's imperative that during our practice session, we focus on external cues, not internal mechanics. Okay, what does that mean? Well, let's define what external cues are versus internal mechanics. So say you're out there on the range trying to fix a slice, and you hear the coaches say this all the time. The instructor or the coach says, hey, rotate your forearm through impact. This is very common cure, and even has a name for it. It's called a forearm release. It helps cure slice by allowing your club face to square up, hit the ball more consistently, and with powerful release. And it promotes a straighter ball flight. The lead forearm rotates outward, and the trail forearm, it pronates, it rotates inward. Okay, this allows the club face to square up at impact. So don't laugh. I've done this before. I tell someone struggling with their slice all about pronating. I tell them about pronate. Hey, pronate. What? I tell them what it means and how to do it. And this is called teaching and learning by internal mechanics. I'm telling them how to do something mechanically. I'm not saying don't do this at all, because it's good to know what your body mechanics are doing. But better way to teach and learn and practice is through external cues. So what is that? So in this case, what would be the external cue? You would simply tell the student, yo, make the club whoosh towards the right field for the right-hand golfers, okay? Or what you do is you set an alignment stick 45 degrees off the target and you tell the student to swing along it, right? They're not thinking pronate. They're not thinking what forearm is doing. All they're trying to do to hit along the target that you created for them, or to make this club whoosh like towards the right field, right? But that creates that movement, that need to eliminate the slice. So whatever you're trying to fix or master out there on the practice range, find the external cue to help you achieve it without trying to mechanically fix it. That's why you'll see pros with alignment sticks or other gadgets to help them reprogram what they're working on externally out there. And then the third way to make your practice session effective and efficient is make sure you're challenging yourself at the edge of ability, meaning don't work on something that's too easy or don't work on things that's too hard. There's a sweet spot that forces problem solving and neuroplasticity. What is neuroplasticity? Well, it's the brain's ability to change and adapt due to new experiences, reorganization, and forming new connections. You want that for your brain, and your brain wants that for you. What is a good example of that on the range? Well, let's say you decided to work on your 7-iron because you hit some missed shots last week. So instead of getting a bucket of balls and hitting your 7-iron over and over again, try to hit 5 shots in a row within 10 feet of the target. Then change your lie and try to hit 5 shots in a row. Then change your swing a bit and do a low punch shot, pretending you're hitting against the wind for the next 5 shots in a row. Then you hit a fade, high fade into the target, 5 shots in a row. This will help you master your 7-iron rather than help you hit your 7-iron consistently in a perfect lie, in a perfect condition. Because here's the key. If you're not occasionally failing, you're not learning. You're just repeating. Did you get that? Here's a quick recap. You need to change your practice habits to really help you not just get better, but help you master your craft. How? 3 things that we talked about. Number 1, repetition with variation. Practicing without variation leads to brittle skills that fail under pressure. Your brain needs variability to build adaptable, robust movement patterns. Okay. Number 2, focus on external cues, not on internal mechanics. Remember, overthinking mechanic disrupts natural movement. Come up with creative ways to use your creative tools to help produce a natural movement. Number 3, find your snap zone. That's somewhere between this is too hard and this is too easy. You need to constantly be learning, and this is where your brain learns and adapts. I learned how to play the piano the old-fashioned way since I was 5 years old. You are introduced to a piece that fits your skill set at that age. You struggle through it, but you eventually learn the music, right? And you play it over and over again in the exact same way, in the exact same piece until you perfect it. Then you get to play it during recital to show off in front of your family how well you memorized it. And I don't know if you ever been to a kid's piano recital before, but that was my life for years. And it can be excruciating, very torturous thing, not only for the people that are watching, but the kids, the look on their faces as they sit on the piano bench one by one, suffering through the lifeless, memorized version of the same old classical tunes that we've heard thousands of times. What are we doing here, folks? What are we learning? What are we teaching? When our kids got older and wanted to learn an instrument, I absolutely didn't want them to suffer through what I suffered through. So we found this amazing teacher that taught piano very unconventional way. And I remember the very first lesson we had that he had with my son. Okay, his name is Graham Winder, by the way, if you want to look him up. And Graham came and he said to him, "Hey, Isaac, play on the piano what you think a thunder would sound like." And Isaac would just go to the low keys and he'd just bang on it. Says, "What? Okay, that's great. Now play what you think a spring raindrops would sound like." And he'd go on the top of the key and he's just kind of doing his little thing. And says, "Oh, that's great." And then Graham sits on the bench with him and says, "I'm going to play this bass melody down here on this side. And why don't you just create music on your own using my bass melody and using the rhythm and just use these five black keys." And the duet they just instantly created right there did something for Isaac. It ignited his love for music. It slowly fed his curiosity and it blossomed his creativity. And they played something really amazing just right then and there. And he quickly realized the endless possibility and the potential of what this little hobby can do. And the recitals were a hoot. Graham allowed his students to like compose their own music, and some sang while they're playing their favorite song from their favorite artist. It was nothing close to being lifeless, nervous, and dreaded recital. It was life-giving. I took piano lessons for 25 years and even got to compete in this sonata piano competition. And looking back, it was a long, dreaded 25 years of suffering. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm grateful that I can play, but I certainly did not master the craft of piano playing or fell deeply in love with it. Isaac, on the other hand, he ended up wanting to pursue his career in music and now is able to play by ear, create his own variation of what he hears, and it plays in the band. And guess what? He absolutely loves it and he continues to thrive and learn. For 25 years, I played the piano the way most golfers practice. Locked in the cage of repetition, chasing perfection, but starving the soul out of the craft. And I'm sure right now, thousands of golfers are stuck in their own lifeless recital, mindlessly pounding drivers, chasing perfect positions, treating the range like a piano bench, grinding the same song until it's dead. Isaac fell in love with music because he wasn't taught to replicate. He was taught to play. And that's the secret that golf misses. Mastery isn't memorization. It's the courage to experiment, to fail, to listen, and to let the craft breathe. So what's the point of this whole story? The repetition without repetition, the variable repetition with splash of creativity and pizzazz brings out the life in the craft. It moves you to another level of excellence and mastery. So next time you're at the range, ask yourself, am I stuck in this lifeless recital or am I creating something that moves me? Did that resonate with you at all? Do you agree? Now, I'm not going to just leave you there. I've always got some drills for you. I'm calling this drill set the variation drill. And these are actionable things that you can practically do during your practice sessions to develop your skills in a fun and challenging way. And I want you to download it. And it's a free download. Just go to bettergolfacademy.com/variations. V as in Victor, A-R-I-A-T-I-O-N-S. So bettergolfacademy.com/variation. You'll get a link to a free download. Well, thanks for being here with me. I always learned a bunch, and I hope you did too. And if you did, could you do me a big favor and could you please share this with a friend who needs to hear it? Also, if you want to, please leave me a review, and I would love for you to subscribe. And if you want to chat with me directly, go to bettergolfacademy.com/hello and leave me a note. I promise to get back to you. You know, I love that we're building this awesome Better Golf community together. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to Better Golf Academy podcast. Thanks for listening to me. I really appreciate you being here. Be awesome and bye for now.